morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. The 2016 election is over and it was full of surprises. From the White House to the Roundhouse, many things will be very different come January. What does that mean for you? To help us sift through the results and take a look at what may come next, we've invited a group of people who have been digging deep into this topic for a long time. My guests this morning are Matthew Reichbach, the editor of New Mexico Political Report. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Gwyneth.
Julianne Grimm is the editor and publisher of the Santa Fe Reporter. Welcome, Julianne.
Hey, Radioland.
And Dan Boyd is the Albuquerque Journal Capital Bureau Chief. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. So obviously the biggest story of this election is that Donald Trump defied all expectations, beat all the polls, thumbed his nose at the establishment, and shocked the world by winning the presidential race. Matt, to Trump's supporters, this was the fulfillment of their wildest dreams and their fondest hopes. To many Democrats, it's the apocalypse. But what will Trump in the White House and Republican control of Congress mean for New Mexico?
Well, I think that we already saw that there is some concern since Governor Susana Martinez, who wasn't a fan of Trump. In fact, she refused to endorse him all the way through the campaign. Then all of a sudden yesterday she says, oh, yeah, I'm cool with Trump now. And I think there are some legitimate worries about his enemies list, as one of his spokespeople, Omarosa, the reality TV star herself, she said, which sounds very Nixonian, exactly Nixonian, but I think that we're going to see a lot of Republicans falling over themselves to say, oh, yeah, I was always kind of fine with Donald Trump.
Everybody has a vested interest in making nice now.
Yeah, because he's not only president. The Republicans also control the House. They control the Senate. And looks like they're going to have an advantage on the Supreme Court again, which didn't look likely a year ago when Justice Scalia passed away.
Right. Julianne, your paper this week has an upside down image of Donald Trump on the cover. What does that?
Yes, it does.
What does that mean?
You know, as we were planning for election night, we knew that it was going to be tight and we would have to, you know, be ready to have a cover depending on the outcome. We had one ready even if we didn't know who the winner was when we went to press. And so, you know, we chose even to not use a headline on the cover that featured Donald Trump upside down. But I think it's a reflection on how our community feels about the outcome of this election. You know, Santa Fe County went cleanly in the other direction. And I think people here are feeling scared and uncertain. I've heard a lot of people use the word numb. I certainly saw lots of people actually shedding tears yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen that at the end of an election. I know we're all tired, but that there was something more than that.
So, you know, outside of the presidential race, what was the biggest news for voters in the Santa Fe area?
I think the most significant race that we saw in the Santa Fe area was for the district attorney, the top prosecutor, you know, the person who helps decide how the laws are really enforced, ultimately, who is punished and who gets a different outcome. And so we saw Marco Peter Serna, the Democrat, take a 72% lead in that, 72% of the vote in that race over the Republican, whose name was Yvonne Chiquin. And they had a really different approach to the office, you know, as they campaigned about what they would do.
Dan, Republicans kept control of Congress, but New Mexico reelected its three representatives. Republican Steve Pierce, who supported Trump, kept his seat in southern New Mexico. So did Democrats Michelle Lujan Grisham and Ben Ray Lujan in central and northern New Mexico. Our two senators are both Democrats. Do you think the majority of our delegation, four Democrats, will have more trouble in Washington getting along and getting things done now?
Well, I think already, you know, they were in the minority in both the House and the Senate. So in that regard, it won't change and maybe have built up a little seniority. But certainly with four of our five members of our delegation being in the minority, it'll be a challenge to get a lot of bills through or have a lot of big influence in Congress. To me, it was interesting that New Mexico didn't go the way of the rest of the nation, you know, that Hillary won by a comfortable margin here. And, you know, Democrats actually had a good night in New Mexico by and large. They took back the House. And then, as you mentioned, still four of our five congressional members are Democrats.
Matt, let's spend 1 minute looking ahead to the next elections. Speaking of this delegation, Matt Reichbach, who do you think is going to run for governor this morning? I saw a story on the front page of the Journal on this exact same topic this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2 days after the election, so let's look forward to the next one. I wouldn't be surprised if Senator Tom Udall did decide he wants to come back to New Mexico, come back to Santa Fe, and run for governor. Steve Pearce, he's run for Senate before, and he kind of got walloped by Udall. And then there's Michelle Lujan Grisham, state representative from the Albuquerque area, who she's expressed interest in it before, and I've heard some Democrats say that she would run. But I have a feeling that if Tom Udall runs, no other Democrat's going to want to get in that primary. They've seen just how popular he is in the state. He's arguably the most popular politician in the state. He has been for a while, since Bingaman retired.
So if Udall runs for governor, you think she's going to run for his seat in the Senate?
That could be one of the possibilities. I think that might leave Hector Balderas kind of in the wind. Maybe he runs for Senate again against Lujan Grisham. Like I said, I don't think any Democrat would run against Udall. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Richard Berry, Albuquerque mayor, run on the Republican side. And I think that Lieutenant Governor John Sanchez, I don't think it'd be a surprise if he ran either.
Huh. So what's Tim Keller going to do?
He could stay in Otter. He could run for mayor. He could do a lot of things. he could run for that first congressional district seat if Lujan Grisham runs.
He could go back to the private sector and make real money.
Yeah, he could. He could put that degree to work.
So, listeners, a President Trump and a GOP-controlled Congress will have a lot of power, but states still control much of what happens in their borders. So, how do you think things will change for you, your family, your job, your industry, your community in the next 4 years? We want to hear from you. We want to hear your reactions. We want to hear your hopes and fears. So, call us now, 1-877-899-5866. That's 877-899-5866. You can also email us at callinshow.org. We have a caller, Glenn in Hamis Springs. Good morning, Glenn in Hamis Springs. Do we have you?
You sure do, and thanks so much for having this topic. Psychosomatically, I've been affected for 2 days. Lost sleep, stomach ache yesterday. I am 72 and have never had that kind of a reaction. I am very concerned, even scared about this Trump guy. As president, most powerful person in the world. I have a son who works with Immigrant Justice there in Albuquerque, and I know he and others he works with are very concerned about what Trump is going to do with undocumented people, DACA people. I'm kind of holding my breath and willing to stand up, speak up, and start fighting again if need be.
Glenn, thank you so much for that. We hope your tummy eventually calms down and you get some sleep.
Thanks, dear. Appreciate it. Take care.
Let's talk about the state Supreme Court. Many Americans were very enthusiastic about the possibility of the first woman president, and they didn't get that. But here in New Mexico, we did get something pretty rare. Most of our Supreme Court justices are female now, and that is a rarity across the country. Judy Nakamura won her race to stay on the Supreme Court, which now has 3 women and 2 men. Julianne Grimm, what do you think the significance is of having a female majority on our state's top court?
It's very significant. I think it is a little star for women who are feeling disheartened by the outcome of this and feeling like the presidential election was influenced by sexism. Even though, you know, Judy Nakamura might not reflect the values of a lot of voters in terms of the way she leans on some constitution issues, just on the point of gender balance, I think this is really good for New Mexico. Santa Fe has enjoyed the honor of having Judge Barbara Vigil serve on the Supreme Court. She was a longtime district judge in our community and I think a well-loved member. And I hope that Barbara and Judith can, you know, bounce off of each other and really be a force for, you know, good decision-making on that court.
Dan, Judy Nakamura is the first Republican woman to win election to the court, the first Republican to win election there since 1980. And that is quite an achievement. As the only Republican, though, among, you know, with four other Democrats up there, do Republicans have any reason to think that she could bring the court a little bit to the right, or should Democrats, you know, feel confident that the court will stay sort of in the middle left?
You know, I think it'll depend on which issues come before the court. I don't think one justice will sway sway the direction of the court when there are five members, and it's traditionally been a pretty Democratic-heavy Supreme Court. I do think we could see more, you know, dissenting opinions, maybe a little bit more, you know, splits on some rulings. And I know a lot of the Supreme Court's work is collaborative, too, so she could, in that way, maybe have an influence on some of the rules or, you know, kind of non-opinions that come out of the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, we want to hear from you. How are you feeling in the aftermath of the election? Are you excited to get to work and get some stuff done? Are you now motivated to take your concerns to the street, to protest, to fight against the Republican administration? We want to hear from you. Call us toll free at 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or follow us on Twitter at KUNM News. Let's talk about the constitutional amendment change on bail. Matt Reichbach, the voters overwhelmingly supported this change to our system. What is that going to mean for New Mexicans who are arrested?
Basically, it means that you can't be held in jail just because you don't have the $50 to pay for bail. And some people do not. They don't have family members that can lend them the money. They don't have the bail bonds that will, the bail bondsmen that will lend them the money. But also, it gives judges leeway to hold people in court without bond if they feel that they're dangerous to the community. And I think that some of the tough on crime stuff we've heard, that this has been a huge concern, where before, in order to hold someone in jail, a judge would just say, okay, you have a $1 million bond because I know you can't raise that much money. And the courts are like, no, wait, that's illegal. You can't just do that. You can't just raise a bond so high that nobody can pay it. So then they're going to this system, which I think is kind of more modernized. And I think that a lot of states are going to be going towards this system that they can hold you in jail if they feel that you're a threat to everyone else. But they can't just say, hey, homeless person, you're going to stay in jail because you for years, maybe not years, but months on this charge of, you know, public loitering because you don't have 40 bucks.
And Dan Boyd, there's a fiscal impact to this because, you know, we've had crowding and it's been costing us a lot of money to keep folks in county jails. Do you think that was part of the reason that some folks wanted to do this? Was there a, hey, we're spending too much money keeping these people in jail? Or was it mostly, do you think, we want to get tougher on crime thing and keep the really dangerous people in jail longer?
Yeah, I think it was both. I think the, you know, my understanding, the fiscal part of it is kind of a to be determined. We'll see exactly what that is. But I think there was a sense of needing at least some reform, some change on that bond system. You know, it kind of evolved as it went through the legislative process this year. And I know the ACLU and a few other groups ended up not supporting the final version. So I think it, you know, we'll see if this still gets tinkered with a little bit as it goes. But I think clearly it was a change that vast majority of voters were in support of.
We have Scott on the phone from Santa Fe now. Scott, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Gwyneth. I want to backtrack a little bit about what you said about the states controlling what happens in their own borders, and you're absolutely correct about that. But I think now with this extreme right White House and a Republican-controlled Congress, which is also pretty extreme, I think we're going to see a huge rollback of how funding happens to the state from the federal government. I mean, we could even see the elimination of the Human Services Department. We could see the elimination of the Education Department. And New Mexico is very much dependent on federal dollars for much of its social services and for its industries like Los Alamos National Lab and Sandia Lab, which will probably get more funding, I would assume. But I think we're going to see a rollback of that And I'm interested to hear what your guests respond to that, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Scott. We actually are going to take a quick break, so we'll let everybody think on that for a minute. When we come back, we will touch base on that. We'll talk about the dramatic changes coming to the New Mexico State Legislature. We'll have an update from Southern New Mexico. What do you want to see your state lawmakers do in the 60-day session that starts in January? We want to hear about it. Let us know. The number is toll-free, 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. Post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or find us on Twitter at KUNM News, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Outpost Performance Space, presenting guitarist Joshua Breckstone's cello quartet, singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright, and Colorado troubadour Gabrielle Louise. November 10th to 12th, info at outpostspace.org.
The Experimental Theater presents Hedda Gabler. As an ambitious and intelligent woman, caught between her personal desires and her fears of societal perception. A touchstone of modern dramatic realism, Henrik Ibsen's timeless masterpiece, seen through the lens of 1950s Boston in a vibrant new production directed by Joe Alberti. Hedda Gabler, showing through November 20th at the Experimental Theater. Details at theater.unm.edu. A message from the tax-exempt UNM.
Richard Daniel Poor wrote this piece inspired by the words and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's called From the Mountaintop. Coming up, we'll hear it from a concert at the Gateways Festival, a gathering with a focus on African American musicians. On the next Performance Today from APN.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. I'm here with Matthew Reichbach, the editor of the New Mexico Political Report, Julianne Grimm, the editor and publisher of the Santa Fe Reporter, Dan Boyd is the Albuquerque Journal Capital Bureau Chief, and in a minute we will hear from Heath Hausman from nmpolitics.net. Let's turn our attention to the state legislature. Matt, several state lawmakers lost their seats on Tuesday, but the one that will undoubtedly represent the biggest change is the loss of Senate Majority Leader Michael Sanchez of Belen. He was a hero to Democrats. He was the bete noire of the governor and Republicans in the House, especially. What does this departure mean for the legislature?
I think it's going to be a really interesting session to see what the Senate does this year because in January, because he has been that guy that's holding the door against the governor, not just this governor. He clashed with Richardson a lot also, and there's a reason they spent all that money, those hundreds of thousands of dollars, to get Sanchez out. On one hand, I think there's going to be a change in tone maybe in the Senate. I know that him and the minority leader, Stuart Engel, were always very big on civility, and everyone, even if you're different parties, we all work together, and the Senate did work like that. I don't know if it's going to be the same now. He's been there since 93. He's been the majority leader since I began covering politics. But also the Democrats ended up expanding their Senate majority by one, and they retook the House. And Sanchez was actually the only Democrat to lose. That was the only Democratic seat to go to Republicans. So it's going to be it'll almost be a Pyrrhic victory because they're celebrating taking out Michael Sanchez. The Republicans are, but then they lost the House. So now it's the House and the Senate are both held by Democrats again. We'll see if they like Senate Majority Leader Peter Wirth more. There's rumors that he'll be the one who will take over. But then they also get to look at Brian Egoff as Speaker of the House. I think that might be more consequential, at least in these next 2 years.
Republicans spent a lot of money getting rid of Michael Sanchez. Dan Boyd, what do you think they're going to get for their money there?
Yeah, I think there was clearly personal between Senator Sanchez and Governor Martinez. But as Matt just mentioned, I think the irony of the Senate could end up being even more Democratic. And I don't think just the loss of him is necessarily going to shift the direction. I think someone else, it remains to be seen who, but will step up and take over that mantle. And I think Democrats may be angry come January that their majority leader was ousted, and they'll probably remember that when it comes to the session.
Matt, I'm going to come back to you really quick. There were several really close races here, a few that we thought on election night might go to recounts. What's the status of those now? Do you know?
Well, there's three that look like they're still going to recounts. The one that's the closest is the David Adkins race. He's a representative on the Albuquerque's west side. He's a Republican, and he won by 2 votes, which is essentially a tie. So that's going to go to a recount. And that one's actually going to be done first because that's all the way within Bernalillo County's borders. The other two races, I think it's HD 29 or 20, it's 23 with a Paul Pacheco representative. He's down by about like 70 votes or something. It's within the 1% threshold for an automatic recount. It's tough to find 70 more votes even in a recount in one of these House districts. So he was in a recount in 2012 where he won by 66 votes on election day and ended up winning by 72 votes after a recount. And the big one, I think, is in the Senate District 9. John Sapien is in a recount. He won by like 0.6% of the vote. And those two, the last two I mentioned, those have to go up to the state canvassing board and they'll do the recount. And that will probably be right around the start of December.
Julianne, Brian Egolf is a representative from Santa Fe. I know you've interviewed him many times before. What can you tell us about how he might be as a Speaker of the House?
You know, I think Brian has really put in the time to learn how to be an effective legislator. And I think you saw him, whip his side of the House as a minority leader. And now that he will, be in a greater position, I think he's going to have the ability to build alliances and move initiatives that the Democrats have been thwarted on just due to the numbers game. And I think we're seeing here with respect to the change over in the Senate that the power of the Democratic Party in New Mexico is really bigger than any one person in the leadership. And the future of what these united chambers will be trying to do, ostensibly together in the roundhouse, I think we could see some movement.
I want to go to the phones now for a minute and talk to Richard in Albuquerque. Richard, good morning and welcome to the call-in show.
Hi, yes. Last night I was downtown Albuquerque, kind of near Marble Brewery, and there was a group of men. They were carrying assault weapons, and they were saying that they were protecting the neighborhood, protecting the property from the protesters. And they said that they wanted to normalize this, that this is going to be the new norm, that citizens are going to be armed and protecting the neighborhoods. And that, they also essentially identified themselves as like a paramilitary group. One gentleman said he was in charge of everyone and like a colonel.
Well, Richard, thank you for that. You bring up a really good point. Everyone is going to adjust to a new normal from Washington to our state house down here to the streets in Albuquerque. I want to welcome Heath Hausman to the show. Good morning, Heath. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
So we're going from Santa Fe to Las Cruces now. What is the big news from southern New Mexico?
Well, southern New Mexico had a big turnout for Democrats. I was going to say a big Democratic turnout, but we actually have a ton of independent voters down here. But they voted really blue in this election. Doniana County legislative races were instrumental in flipping the House back to Democrats, just as they were instrumental in flipping the House to Republicans in 2014. So these are swing voters that can go any way, but in this election, they definitely went for Democrats.
Heath, one of the things we were looking at in the last election was problems at the polls in Chaparral. There mm-hmm. were, this is a kind of an interesting area down there. It's almost like Pajarito Mesa up here outside of Albuquerque. Part of this area is in Doña Ana County and part of it is mm-hmm. in Otero County, and they have very different flavors to them. Did you see, and so what I mean is Doña Ana County is more urban, it's more liberal, Otero County is more rural, more conservative. Were there problems in Chaparral this year?
There is one polling place on the Otero County side at a fire station there, and there are two or three in Doña Ana County. There were some problems at the polling place in Chaparral, as there have been in the past. But activists and others were ready for it. I do want to say this Secretary of State's office was really good about coordinating everyone, regardless of party. They were on the phone with Common Cause, with the county clerk in Otero County, who's a Republican, and others, the AG's office, making sure that things went better. And the clerk's office, they had one day of early voting this year at that polling place in Otero County. They've never done that before. And so the problems were revealed that Saturday. And by election day, they had additional equipment, additional staff. And that one polling place had more than twice as many votes in this election as they did in 2012 and 2008. So there was incredibly high turnout there.
And that's a heavily Hispanic area, isn't it, Heath?
It is. It's heavily Hispanic, Democratic. Chaparral's an interesting community because population-wise, people think that it's about as big as Alamogordo, 30,000 people. But a lot of those people live off the radar. And it's incredibly rural. They don't even have the infrastructure to really incorporate as a city if they wanted to. But it's a really interesting place. And I know statewide there wasn't a huge Latino vote. There weren't like really high numbers of people turning out in unprecedented levels. But in Chaparral and in Sunland Park, so right along the border, even in El Paso, Texas, there was a really high Latino vote. So I think at least right along the border where people were hearing talk about building a wall and it would tangibly impact their lives, they did turn out in really high numbers.
Folks, we want to hear from you. Did you have any problems at the polls? Did you encounter any issues? Was it smoother than usual? Let us know. We want to hear from you. The number is toll-free, 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can tag us in a tweet with your question at KUNM News. On the phones now, we have Sarah in Albuquerque. Sarah, good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show.
Yes, I just want to say that this election really mattered to New Mexico. And it's important because, you know what, I think New Mexico, we show our true color, which is blue, you know, because we turned out for Hillary. And then we also took back our House of Representatives in the roundhouse. And then it even triggered an automatic recount. So it was like a difference between like 100 votes in those three districts. So I just want to say that, you know, this proves to the whole country that we are blue. And so, and our votes do matter. And I just want to, you know, say thank you to all the Democratic voters that worked so hard that even came out to vote. And, that one of the problems that I've noticed was that in this election, there was 1,000 absentee or mail ballots floating around 2 days before the election date. I think maybe 200 were in the process. It got there by 7 o'clock. And there was another maybe 200-300 that people handed in that went into within their hands in the polling places by 7 o'clock. But there was about 500 or 600 that just went right into the garbage can. And you know something? We don't have that's why that we're doing a recount and stuff like that, because people really don't have enough public service announcement that the mail ballots have to be in by 7 o'clock November 8th.
Sarah,
so that's the problem.
Thank you for bringing that up. Matt Reichbach.
Yeah, I think what she's talking about is some people just forgot to turn them or didn't turn them in time. I know in some other states like California, you can send them in as long as they're postmarked by election day. They still count. So that's why California won't know how many people actually voted for weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating. It's weeks. But I do know that you can go and hand in your absentee. I guess it's kind of late to say now. But you can hand in your absentee ballots into the polling place. I know that's how my grandma has done it for years. I know that there were about, I think the Bernalillo County clerk told me there was, the clerk's office told me there's 200 or 300 people that did that like right at the last minute. So those and provisional ones are still have to be counted that aren't in the totals that we've seen so far.
On the phone, we have Andres from Rio Arriba County. Andres, good morning. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show.
Good morning. Yes, excited, optimistic of the outcome of the presidential election, and see if we can just join together, like you said, and all work together and for the better cause of New Mexico, especially because that's where we live. And see if they can just get things done. And very excited about the outcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Andres. Let's talk about money for a minute. This week on New Mexico In Depth, Sandra Fish wrote a story arguing that political action committees have replaced the Democratic and Republican parties in New Mexico as the most powerful groups who raise and spend money on elections. Dan Boyd, does that sound true to you?
It does sound true to me. It's really changed over the last 4 to 6 years. Now we have these super PACs on both sides of the political spectrum that don't have to abide by the state's limits on campaign contributions and spend millions of dollars on legislative races, including TV ads, which, 10 years ago would have been unheard of in the legislative races. And, and a lot of them on both sides of the aisle, again, are funded by out-of-state groups. So I think that's something that's certainly disconcerting to a lot of elections types folks and some legislators. And there are court cases on this, so it may be tough to overturn that, but I think there may be at least some discussion about maybe trying to curb that influence or at least require some more disclosure and things like that.
Julianne, looking at the races in the Santa Fe area, did you see a lot more money coming out of political action committees targeting candidates with the expensive mailers and TV ads?
We really didn't have the kind of level of that here, at least not that I'm aware of, that we saw in some other races. Certainly that was a factor in the Secretary of State's race, which was, discussed here. I think candidates on both sides were hurling some accusations about PAC funding, and there was PAC funding for both of those candidates. But our other races were a little smaller and tamer this year.
Let's talk about that Secretary of State's race. Heath, the Secretary of State is the third highest elected official. Of course, Maggie Toulouse-Oliver is, we don't have Heath. Sorry about that. So, Matt, Maggie Toulouse-Oliver is the third highest elected official in the state. Martinez and Sanchez are both Republicans. If they go to a lunch meeting in Texas, then a Democrat is going to be technically in control of the state. Is that potentially interesting?
I have a feeling that they're not going to be both gone from the state when there's still legislation pending one way or the other. That would be an interesting way for things to happen.
And Martinez has mostly said, oh, I've got my BlackBerry. I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of an antiquated thing where when they're out of state, they're no longer technically governor. I know that when Richardson and Dennis were here, they had it where Richardson would go out of state and then Dennis would sign this women's law that would help her in the next election, which, of course, ended up not working. But I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see what Maggie Toulouse-Oliver does. She's been Bernalillo County Clerk for a while here. And so she knows how elections work. She's administered elections.
She's got a lot of ideas that, like same day voter registration. She talked about doing mail in ballots when I interviewed her, but she can't do these things on her own.
No, she'll be lobbying the legislature to do this. And all those things that you mentioned, those aren't things that Governor Martinez, I don't think, would sign. It might take 2 more years. And again, Toulouse-Oliver is going to have to run again in 2 years. She doesn't get the full 4-year term. She has to do it all over again. It'll be three terms in a row running a statewide campaign, which can't be.
She's just on that little hamster wheel. She's not going to get off.
Can't be fun. But one thing that she can do is bring back straight ticket voting, which Democrats have wanted since Duran won. What is it, 6 years ago now? I feel old.
We have a caller, Mike, in Albuquerque now. Mike, good morning and welcome to the KUNM call-in show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. My concern is that President-elect Trump is vehemently opposed to solar and wind power and intends to cut all research for solar and wind power. I've been in the industry for almost 40 years, and we've survived all kinds of administrations. And Trump has vowed to disable wind power if possible, and we're in for a good fight. He was against a wind farm being within eyeshot of his resort in Scotland. He opposed it. He fought him all the way to the parliament. and to the point where the Scottish people, over a half million people, have petitioned to not have him come back to Scotland. Very backwards, he wants to have reinstate coal, even though coal has lost 50 companies in the past year. And we do work with this person. And everybody's got their trail of tears as ours.
Mike, thank you for that point. You know, wind industry, wind power is becoming a bigger and bigger part of New Mexico's economy, and we are going to have to look at that very closely. Right now, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will talk about access to the polls a little more and the effect of this election on New Mexicans in Indian country. Did you have any trouble voting? Were you chastised for taking a ballot selfie? Did your area have long lines or fewer polling places? We want to hear about it. The number is toll-free, 877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also find us on Facebook at KUNM Radio and on Twitter at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
It's the month to give thanks, so today we thank our vehicle donors. Their unwanted car or truck was turned into the great programming you're listening to right now. They've helped us totally bypass the third pledge drive of most other public radio stations. If you'd like to join the many vehicle donors who get a substantial tax donation for 2016 and a KUNM membership, call now, 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention consistently lists high rates of obesity for Native American kids. What do our people need to help kids maintain a healthy weight? Does encouraging them to go outside and play really work? We'll get some possible solutions on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Thank you, and welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. I'm here with Matthew Reichbach, the editor of the New Mexico Political Report. Thank you, Matt. Julianne Grimm is the editor and publisher of the Santa Fe Reporter. Dan Boyd is the Albuquerque Journal Capital Bureau Chief. And we have Antonia Gonzalez from National Native News. Good morning, Antonia.
Good morning.
Antonio, what do you think is the big takeaway of this election for Native American voters here in New Mexico?
Well, we saw, thinking back to when the candidates were coming, there was a lot of support backing Indian country for presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Both of his rallies that he had here in New Mexico were packed in Santa Fe and in Albuquerque. And then you saw support for also when former President Bill Clinton came. And then, of course, when we had the Trump rally here, you saw Native people from different Pueblos and the Navajo Nation coming to support Donald Trump. Just recently, right before Election Day, you had Donald Trump Jr. go to Shiprock, New Mexico, and rally on the Navajo Nation. You saw the Trump campaign roll out a Native American coalition on the last week in October. So it's interesting when we look at New Mexico and voting that Indian country is on all sides. And when you look at tribal leaders and hear from tribal leaders, that's their work, is that they have to work with not only the tribal community, locally, state level, nationally. So no matter who's in office, you know, it's on the part of tribal leaders to work on all sides.
Antonia, one of the biggest themes of this election and one of the things everyone is trying to, tease out a little bit more now is this idea of blue-collar white voters who felt left behind by the economy, who felt ignored by their leaders, who felt frustrated that they hadn't made any personal gains, that their communities are suffering. And that, we think, was behind a lot of the enthusiasm for Donald Trump. Are there parallels there with those same kinds of feelings in Indian country?
I think when you look, you really need to look at the individual voters, because when you look at tribes and who they're endorsing, organizations who they're endorsing, it may be different than the individual voter. We saw tribes, including the Navajo Nation, backing Clinton, but then, like I said, you saw a lot of people at this Shiprock rally who were backing Donald Trump. So I think it depends when you're talking about individual voters versus the tribe. We also see national Native organizations across the country who are also saying now, is the time to work with whatever administration is in office. There has been transition working with the Obama administration for more than a year now, regardless of, looking at not knowing the future, but definitely knowing that there was a new administration that's going to be coming into office, and work has already been done to make sure that incentives, initiatives that have been implemented by the Obama administration for the last 8 years continues regardless who's in office. So we're going to have to see what happens with a lot of those initiatives.
Antonio, we talked to Heath Hausman earlier about problems that we saw at the polls in Chaparral during the last election. The Department of Justice sent more than 500 monitors and observers to polling sites in 28 states, including Cibola County here in New Mexico. And that includes parts of Acoma Pueblo and the Zuni and Navajo reservations. What has been the problem out there that the Department of Justice has been looking at?
I think when you look at tribes here in New Mexico and across the country, access to the polls is always a big issue. Getting people to the polls, because a lot of areas are rural, and also having assistance at the polls. A lot of our Native American people speak more than one language, especially here in New Mexico. You have people who speak English, their native language, and some people who also speak Spanish. So it's also having that assistance. I think access and assistance at the polls are some of the challenges that voting advocates have long worked on, and as well as, national groups and tribal leaders.
Did you hear about any problems at the polls specifically from Indian Country during this election?
I haven't heard of any specific problems. I know that there are poll observers all over Indian Country, including you had groups in South Dakota go, as Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is in the spotlight right now for its fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline Project. There were groups who went to South Dakota reservations as poll observers to make sure, they were observing what was going on during the election.
Thank you for that. We have Alva in Albuquerque on the phone now. Alva, good morning, and welcome to the KUNM call-in show.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I'm a little concerned with the idea that New Mexico is very insulated from what happens at the federal level, and the big example would be health care, which I understand Paul Ryan is already targeting, and I think there's a lot of people in Congress who would love to send us back to the days when the insurance companies could pick the healthy people to insure and not insure the sick people. And if you got sick, they could throw you off their insurance. And I sure don't want to see that happen.
Alva, I think a lot of people are wondering about this now, especially because we are in the open enrollment period for Obamacare, and thousands of people across the country are getting emails and letters asking them to pick a new insurance plan at the same time that we are hearing that the Republicans in Congress and President-elect Trump want to repeal Obamacare. Matt Reichbach, what do you predict briefly will happen with the proposed repeal of Obamacare now?
Well, I was reading something today where they're still trying to figure out what their plan is going to be. I don't think that anybody expected Trump to win. Even Trump's people thought there wasn't a path for victory. And now they're going to say, well, we're going to repeal it, but what are they going to replace it with is the problem. Is it going to go back to what it was like before, which was a even more flawed process, arguably? What happens to people with pre-existing conditions? I know that I just scheduled a doctor's appointment for the first time in about 7 years because even though I get insurance through my work, I do have some shoulder problems that would be pre-existing conditions. It's going to be interesting to see what he does on this and many other things. I think the EPA is something a lot of people are concerned about. And I just saw something the other day where it hasn't been under 30 degrees in Albuquerque yet this fall, which is crazy.
Let's hit some of these issues just briefly that the callers have brought up. Julianne Grimm, wind energy. There, you know, we had a caller earlier who was concerned that new faces in Washington will try to roll back the wind energy programs. What do you see happening there? Is that likely?
You know, I don't have a great sense of that, but I think that if that did happen, it would be damaging for the movement to, you know, change the balance of how we keep the lights on in America. You know, I think we even saw at the New Mexico level, we saw them let the solar tax credits for residential projects. We saw that pot of money get completely depleted and not refilled and not reauthorized. And so even those partnerships with the federal programs that are in place today have not always been solid, you know, for New Mexico. And I think that things are fairly uncertain on that front.
Yeah, we hear that from our listeners today. We had a Twitter comment from Therese who asked, what does rollback mean in terms of a Republican-controlled Congress? And we will be looking at that in terms of Obamacare and wind energy and a whole lot of other things, the Iran deal. There's a lot. We have an email comment here from Imani who says, Trump is not my president. His election is the result of a Republican majority, the DNC refusing to see Bernie Sanders and other factors. We have an email comment from Betsy who says, are armed vigilantes something we have to get used to now? She's referring to a caller earlier who said he saw folks demonstrating downtown in Albuquerque last night, practicing open carry. I want to ask you, Antonia, do you have any predictions on what the impact of this election will be on Indian country? Do you see more dialogue happening here? Do you see progress? Do you see what's in your crystal ball?
Well, it's almost like we have to wait and see. You know, the Obama administration has made, you know, if, when you talk to tribal leaders, they'll tell you that, you know, there was much attention to them with the Obama administration, including the annual White House Tribal Nation Summits. You know, there's always issues that tribes are concerned about: healthcare, education, housing, economic development, environmental protection. So we'll have to see that how those things start to play out, and who are going to be the key people being put in position to be advisors or heading, you know, the Interior Department, different agencies that tribes work with, and treaty responsibilities, and keeping up the government to government relationship. And I think something in New Mexico that is unique is our cabinet level position with Indian affairs, and that the governor has an annual summit here with tribes. And, you know, in New Mexico, we have leadership in the Democratic Party with Deborah Holland. And also we've had past leadership with Richard Luarke, who both are Native Americans. So you can see also in the state legislature, we have a handful of Native American lawmakers, and even, you know, Democratic and Republican. So it's we'll have to wait and see what happens here in the state and nationally.
Thank you for that. You know, we have an email comment from Chris here who says, we need to talk about gerrymandering. For the second time in 16 years, we have a Democrat candidate who won the popular vote, but a Republican who got the Electoral College and won. Dan Boyd, help me remember, when are we doing redistricting again?
We do redistricting here every 10 years after the census. So it'll be coming up again here after 2020. And I did want to return you had a point really quickly. One caller you raised about federal spending in New Mexico, and I think that is something to watch. I mean, not to end the show on a down note, but we are still in a budget crunch here. We're a state with about 40% of the population on Medicaid and low oil and gas prices. There could be a lot of urgency to try to diversify our economy or hope oil prices go back up, or there could be more budget cuts come January.
Yeah, we'll definitely be looking at those budget forecast numbers and what the legislature is going to do. Speaking of that, Julianne Grimm, Governor Martinez has 2 years left in her term. She's got a Democrat-controlled state legislature who is going to be coming back in January. Do you think she's going to be more likely now in the end of her term to try to work with the legislature, especially with her primary foe, Michael Sanchez, gone?
You know, I think Antonia's last answer about we'll have to wait and see is probably the most appropriate response. I don't think that Governor Martinez has really displayed a lot of willingness to change, and so I'm not sure that we're going to see her cooperate more, even with sort of different faces. And I think that, you know, this issue of which bills land on her desk and what she does with them is going to become more where the rubber hits the road on her decisions.
Matt Reichbach, you mentioned earlier Governor Martinez did not support Trump. Many national Republicans with national ambitions were cautious about that. Governor Martinez had been mentioned as a vice presidential pick before her sort of public tiff with Trump. What do you think is next for Governor Martinez?
I mean, there's that Senate race in 2 years. She can run for that. She can't run for governor again. She's term limited. So after 2 more years, she's gone for at least one more term, no matter what. I think that she was hoping that there was another Republican presidential candidate that if they would win, that maybe she can get a cabinet position there. She could have got Department of Homeland Security. There's a few things that she could have done. Not under Trump, though. I mean, she's on his bad list.
We have seen him kind of come back and make amends. So anything is possible at this point. In the words of Antonio Gonzalez, we will have to wait and see about that. I want to thank all of you for joining us here today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thank you especially to our guests, Matthew Reichbach, Julianne Grimm, Dan Boyd, Antonia Gonzalez, and Heath Hauseman. We have posted links to the information that we discussed today. Go look at those on KUNM.org. If you missed any of our program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can email your comments about today's show to callinshow@kunm.org. Find us on Facebook, KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter at KUNM News. Tune in next Thursday morning at 8. We're going to pivot to something that you may have done before, during, and after the election, and that's drinking wine. That's next Thursday morning at 8 on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thank you to Marino Spencer, who engineered the show today. Anna Landy assisted with production. Sarah Trujillo live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and she screened your calls today. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. This is KUNM.